And you are now entering the Big Daddy's podcast.
All right, let's kick this thing off.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Big Daddy's. It's your host, Big Daddy, with your co-host, Big Boy. And we're welcoming a very special guest here, someone that's been a, I'd say, season one listener. I think he has. I hope he's listened to every episode, but a longtime friend, to say the least. And we were just talking before the podcast kicked off, and I was trying not to get too far into it, but I've been calling him JoJo for the longest time. I think he goes by Joseph now. Can you neither confirm nor deny?
Been going by Joseph now, trying to take hold of my name, but yeah, JoJo is what you know me by.
That's right. What do you know me by that Jackson had no idea about?
Jumble. So there's three of you, you know, Nick, Zach, and Jacob. So we all just put your last name and your first initial together. So you were Jumble to everyone.
I think we got a little confused and we all look too much alike. So it's probably a lot easier.
That's fair.
But I was wondering the whole time leading up to this, I was like, do I call him JoJo anymore? Do I call him Joseph? I was like,
no, totally okay. Totally okay. No, my family still calls me JoJo. When I come down to Florida, people still call me it. So I'm used to it.
Nice. Okay, perfect. Perfect. So tell everyone about yourself a little bit or whatever you want to share.
So we know each other kind of from wrestling in high school. I was in the same grade as your brother, Nick. And then after high school, I did the military, went into the Marine Corps. Went to nursing school after that, first 2 years in Florida, and then I got my bachelor's in North Carolina, and I've been travel nursing since. I've all throughout the East Coast. I'm out on the West Coast now in Oregon, Portland over there, and trying to make my way back to the East Coast here shortly and do a few things on this side. So that's kind of like the short rundown of my life right now.
Nice, man. I'm happy to hear it. So did you know that Jackson also used to be a nurse?
Was he? You transitioned out. I'm proud of you.
Well, yeah, man. You know, my dad was too. He always wanted one of his sons to be a male nurse. So,
yeah.
So you're proud of me, and he was proud of me.
Where'd you do that at? Was it over here?
Man. A really prestigious hospital known as Wusthof Medical Center. May or may not have heard of it. And I got fired from there maybe back in like 2011, 2012.
Did you really?
Yeah. And it was. Like, my claim to fame is I got fired from the third worst hospital in the country. So, oh, man.
Yes. Dude.
But
did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
Yeah. But no, it was a short-lived disaster. I got pretty screwed over. I'm not going to take responsibility. Yeah. I'm not going to do the Jocko way and take extreme ownership of this.
Yes.
I'm going to say it was not my fault. It was crazy. My had you know this story, Jacob, or no?
No, I kind of like, I want you to keep going.
So I don't know. So the OR was taking IV bags of fentanyl and just slinging it into patients as needed. You know, like I think they'd have a doctor's order for it. However, they weren't like scanning it and registering it through the pharmacy. They were just pulling the bag and giving it. And so in the hospital, there were just like on paper, like tons and tons of missing IV bags of fentanyl, which is a very, very intense drug on and off the streets, you know? And so when this new management that bought out the hospital found this out, they just were like, we're gonna run every nurse and see what's going on here. And so, man, Wusthof was haggard. So
still
haggard.
Is.
Yes. Yeah. Well, hey, good to know. Dude, did you have to do OR stuff there or no?
Dude, I was there all the time. And there was like nurses getting fired for sketchy stuff like this.
Dude, all right. Bro, I'm not sketchy. I'm a good guy.
Yeah, right. Keep going.
Was this your last like nursing experience?
No. Thank God. Oh, okay. Thank God. It's like, yeah. I got fired. Like then that would seem sketchy if that was a wrap for me after that.
I'm just wondering why we're not all wealthy now, like when you're slinging fentanyl on the streets. But continue.
Gosh, I know, right? So... yeah, so they ran me, and Wusthof was haggard. I was like overwhelmed all the time, and here I am making a lot of excuses. I used to like pull a Percocet and like give it to a patient and then go to lunch and be like, yeah, I'm going to come back later and scan that in, you know, and then I would forget to do it or whatever. And so this would be the case of heavy drugs like Dilaudid, morphine, Percocet, and just sometimes it gets scanned, sometimes it won't, you know? And I didn't cover my butt well. And so when they were doing the scans of all the nurses, like, I think it showed up that it really wasn't that bad. I might have had two narcotic administrations that were pulled from the Pyxis, like where the medicine stored, without scanning it to the patient. So it looks like I pulled it from the patient, but never gave it to the patient, right?
Oh, okay.
And so with that, I got put on probation. And it was my best friend, Spencer, who my son's named after as well. And during the probationary period, they urine tested us. We, of course, we were clean. Like, you know, we were like pretty good kids, you know, we're involved in the church and walking the walk. And of course, and so, we weren't worried about it. We weren't tripping, but we just had, they're like, look, for the next 30 days, you guys gonna be on your game with your med passes. Like, yeah, cool. No problem. And then ultimately the new management company just like, hey, we're going to fire these guys. We're just going to make an example of them. So me and my best friend, Spencer, were sat down at the same time and like, hey, we're letting you guys go. And pretty unreal. I think I didn't have any kids yet, but I was like newly married for like a month. So I'm like leaving the hospital at 3 a.m. calling my wife like, hey, so I just got fired. Which in medicine, that's really bad.
That's
like,
a real that's, big deal.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's a big deal. Like, it's not like you're working at Domino's Pizza, like slinging pepperonis, you know, you're
slinging,
I don't know. Yeah. You're slinging Percocet instead. And so what was ironic is my friend Spencer, who got fired at the same time, his dad was a lawyer. And so all we did was we're like, oh, hey, hook us up. Just make sure our licenses get protected, that we're not going to like have a red flag next to our name. So he was protecting us in the process and reached out to the HR. And so their HR thought we were just straight up suing them for like an unlawful firing, pretty much. Because, you know, like the thing was, is like, you know, you have to pass a drug test, which we did. And you have to like not blow a narcotic pass, pretty much. You have to like make sure all this is
documented. You didn't do anything wrong.
We didn't do anything wrong. We followed the probation and they still fired us. So they thought that we were anteing up to sue them for not following their own hospital protocol. And we found out, like, because our managers were like friends and stuff, and they were horrified we were fired in the first place because they really loved us as nurses. They're like, look, these guys are willing to settle with you. Take them to court, when that was not what it was about. But we didn't do that because there's two hospitals in this city.
Yeah.
And like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, we don't want to like go down as the dudes that sued Wusthof and then be like, oh, hey, Health First, we're great dudes. You should really hire us. So, yeah, I got fired on a Friday. I was hired on a Monday just because I had manager friends at Health First. And, so yes, long story long, I still think it's a good story. And worth it, because I don't think the audience has
that
heard it yet.
Insane. Yeah.
But JoJo, what's wild. Your take on that? Does that sound super shady? Like, you don't know me at all. Do I sound like a huge liar drug addict? Like, what's your take on all this?
I mean, in my experience, I have met a few nurses that were definitely taking meds or stealing meds. But no, that sounds like there's a lot of hospital systems where, unless it's like the Epic system, you're not really scanning meds all the time. You're just taking it and giving it. And in any scenario, that could definitely happen. I don't think it sounds sketchy on your end.
Okay,
at all,
good.
You're passing a urine test.
Like, yeah,
what else
exactly.
Do they want
you
to do?
Sure.
Do you, Joe, do you got any crazy stories like that?
I do not have any crazy stories like that. I have not been.
Yeah, that takes the cake, right?
Yeah.
Like, no patient throwing poop at you or nothing?
Oh, I thought you meant, yeah.
Would that be drug related?
Does it have to be drug related? No, patients.
They're just like, no, I've never been fired from any job ever. I keep my jobs, actually.
Oh, I mean, I've only had like three major jobs. I was a personal trainer, and then the Marine Corps, and nursing. But I mean, nursing stories, I mean, we can go down a rabbit hole of that. I've had dementia patients throw poop at me. They at you in the middle of the night. I mean, patients swinging at you. Everything, man. Everything.
Good thing you're a big man, because that would be. Gosh.
You know what's funny? It doesn't matter. In the hospital, they look at me and they're like, "Yeah, I'll fight you." I'm like, "Wow,
wow!"
Not the fighting. And you, I'm like,
you're not the guy. You're a Marine, bro. Not only are you their nurse, you're an American hero, and you're a trained killer. Don't cross you. You know.
Well, I'm also like 5'9", I've always been stocky. Like, I'm not the guy you look and you're like, oh, I don't want to punch that guy in the face.
Wow. JoJo's the guy you look at and you're like, you're like, when he was benching like crazy, I remember this, and you're like, he's got bigger breasts than my girlfriend or my wife. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's that guy.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
JoJo, so, did you wrestle with these boys?
Yeah,
it was a beast.
I was the
189. And then we had a lot of good wrestlers at
a guy. Yeah, it was a good team back then. But you
stacked.
You'll have to share for us to post for the fans later. A photo of you freshman year to senior year. That is a glow up. Is that what they call it? A glow up? That glow is up?
Is that what they still calling them?
I have no idea. It's a beautiful transition though.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, like of course. Shine kind of thing.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Freshman year, I weighed the same freshman year as I did senior year. I just put on muscle at that time.
Maybe like 5 inches shorter too.
5 inches shorter. Yeah. It wasn't a good look. Freshman
year. Yeah. But anyway, really, we're gonna jump into it now. I'll stop goofing off now. I could go on all day doing this, catching up. But so we wanted to bring you on just because you, I think you posted a story saying you listened to it, which is cool because you and I hadn't talked in a while. So I was honored. But you kind of have a different upbringing than I think most people would. And so I thought you'd be a cool guest to bring on and talk about mentorship, talk about your life, talk about fatherhood, things like that you went through differently growing up. But yeah, just kicking that off, like what was that like for you growing up, and what, you know, what is your background? Because for the people, they don't know what that is.
Yeah. So I grew up, my mother and father were never together. So my Northern Florida, my mother had me 7 months down the road. She passed away of a heart attack. Then I lived with my grandparents until I was about 7, 8 years old. And then my grandmother passed away. That's a whole nother story. But after that, I lived with my uncle. My uncle was, I believe, 20, 21 at the time. And he was raising 2 girls of his own. So then I lived with him. He's now raising 3 kids as a 21-year-old man. He gets a babysitter. They end up getting together. That's who my aunt is now. And I think you've met her a couple times throughout the years, Lori.
Yeah.
And they end up having a son named Blake. So now we've got 4 kids, a 19-year-old woman and a 21-year-old man trying to raise 4 kids on their income. And then after that, we moved down to Melbourne, and they have another daughter named Madison. That's who I'm with right now. I'm staying at her house while I'm in Florida, her and her husband's house. So now they've got all these kids running around, and that was my background. So I never really knew my father growing up. I think he came around a couple times as a kid, then knew my grandparents as my parents, and then raised with my aunt and uncle. So I never had that like mother, father, you know, full household at all time. So that's kind of the interesting come up that I had. And then, you know, we in high school, that was always interesting for everyone as well, because everyone always thought my aunt was my sister everywhere we went, because she was only, I think she's 13 years older than I am. So that was getting raised by people who were still kids in essence.
Right. So that's even interesting for me to hear, because I always knew like roughly the background story, but not super in depth, or even how young it's Uncle John, right? Am I getting his name right still?
Uncle John.
I hope I remembered after all these years. But yeah, Uncle John, good old Uncle John. Like a lot of kudos to him, because I didn't know how young he was.
They were so young.
And your
so,
aunt, like, yeah.
Yeah. We talk about that now. We're like, I couldn't imagine. Four or five kids. I'm 30 and I still have 4 or 5 kids, you know.
How old was Uncle John when he took you in?
He was 20, 21.
That's insane. Mad respect, insane. Man.
We need to bring him on. Like, I didn't know that. So I'm like, man, I got to
He's a good person to bring on. His life is interesting as well. He's done a 180 from the man he was raising us and everything else. He found God in about 2014, 2015, and he's become a whole different person. And I respect him a lot for that. There's no words to describe the man he's become.
Yeah, that's super cool. That's awesome to hear. We will definitely make that happen in the future. But at least right now that we get to focus on you. So so growing up outside of Uncle John, you know, would you feel like he was a father figure, or do you feel like, I know you mentioned to me like mentors and other mentors, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. He's the father figure in my life. There was some times that I had met my biological father, a little bit of contact, but no, Uncle John was the main person, raised me, taught me a lot of different things in life. And then, you know, we kind of had our rough patches, and I don't know how much you saw that in high school and heard about that. It was, I would say the other mentors came in because I left at night. I was 18, 19, and left for the Marine Corps. So at that point, you know, there was mentors, older, you know, gentlemen that I learned a lot from through the years. And now, you know, Frank Avila, great mentor I've had. I met some people in the military, just great people who taught me discipline and determination and how to just, I guess, try and find the right words for this. I think, yeah, determination, you know, just being a man and taking ownership for the things that you're doing and the things that you want in life.
Right. Yeah. I like that you mentioned Frank. I didn't, I mean, because I guess I kind of forget that you spent so much time with Anthony Bedard at that time. Because I think, did Meg let you, was it you and Deli that moved in with them for a while?
We moved in. Yeah, that's a... So after my senior year of high school, my family and I, we had a lot of rough patches, and this was the 180 I was mentioning about Uncle John, but I left. After high school, I walked out, didn't really talk to them much. I went and lived with Meg and Frank in Deli, as you know. He was there too, and I signed up to go to the police academy because they were like, hey, you guys are adults. You got to figure it out. You can't keep living here. And got in, was going to the police academy, and then Deli said, hey, I'm joining the Marine Corps. And I said, hey, I'm doing it with you. So that's nice. How that was. But yeah, I spent a lot of time with Frank. Frank showed me kindness, showed me forgiveness, you know. Frank was the guy that you could come to and talk to, and he'd offer you guidance rather than I'm going to yell at you. And that's back then, that's kind of what I had with Uncle John. There was fear more than love growing up.
Do you feel like, did Frank also provide firmness? I could see that like loving kindness from him, but I also feel like we know Meg is super caring and welcomes anyone into her house, like clearly let two new young adults into her house to live there. But I could see her being more of, not getting walked over is the word, but Frank being the one being like the loving, caring as well, but then being like, hey, y'all got to figure this out and, you know, put it, giving you some tough love or some firmness at least too.
Frank, I think he knew at that time that tough love or discipline was not what I needed at that moment.
Okay.
He really showed me just a lot of kindness. A lot of kindness. I can't say Frank now, like you look at Frank, like, yeah, it's tough love. Unless he's got Anthony's daughters in his arms. That guy loves those kids. But yeah, no. Frank at that time knew, like, I just needed some guidance and reassurance and just kindness in my life, because I was coming from a place that we didn't really have that at then.
Yeah. That's super cool to hear. I mean, Frank's always been top notch. I like Frank a lot. And cool, you and I were neighbors for a while too. Kind of forgot about that because people didn't know that I live right down the street from them. So that's cool. I mean, I think that speaks a lot to the value of a mentor in your life. And Jackson and I have talked about this in past, like a past, I think it's the most recent episode actually. But you know, what can you share for what you feel like, whether it's Frank or someone else, like just the value of being a mentor or finding a mentor yourself or some kind of father figure, even if you have a father that's present, but maybe you don't have that kind of relationship with.
Well, even in general, like you said, a father figure mentor, it's just someone that can provide you guidance and someone that can give you that knowledge that you need growing up. I worked in a children's home where these kids didn't have that. And then that kind of helped me reflect on it. Because when I was a kid, I always looked at Uncle John. I was like, I fear you. Like, I should love you, but I fear you more than I love you. But at that same time, that father role, like he taught me hard work and discipline. He taught me, you know, if you want to get something, you go work for it. And that's how you obtain things. That's how you get, you know, forward in life. And that's reflected throughout my life, like hard working in high school, you know, wrestling, military, Marine Corps, career, everything that I've done. I would say I've got that determination from him. And then a mentor of just kindness, you know, like I said, with Frank, it's just having someone to show you how you should be and what, you know, people need in life rather than what you see in, you know, social media and everything else. But it's right. just that, yeah. that teacher. And then I've met people, like I said, in the Marine Corps, just great people that I talk the talk, walk the walk, and that's who you want to, you know, emulate and how you want to see yourself presented.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we hit on anything at any point that you're uncomfortable, like let's say we talked about it, you're like, I kind of wish I wasn't on the internet later, just let us know. Okay, bro. Because just basically I preface that with what I want to ask you, you know, like so you know, that's really cool that you had you gain different things from different people in your life, which I think is wise to not think that one person has to fill every void or carry on every like kind of duty or what we need as men being raised, you know? So you kind of found that in Frank and your uncle. Now your uncle, who was a young man when he took you in, he sounded like kind of like a tough as nails type dude. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. That's fair to say. And he will admit it to this day. So anything I say, he'll admit to, and he's happy to have a conversation about it. But yeah, he was tough as nails. You didn't do anything wrong. It was by the book, you know, never out of line.
Sure. Well, like it's interesting. Like I was just teaching about Noah and the flood to my students last night. I'm a high school youth pastor. And, you know, we see so much in that story, the judgment of God, but we also see in that story, the mercy of God. And it sounds like, your uncle maybe like operated maybe on the heavy side of things. And then later on in life, you kind of had this merciful person in your life. Yes. But would you say, like, when you look back and remind me, Jojo, do you have any children yet?
I do not.
Okay. So like when you look back, and one of the questions we always ask fathers on the show is like, what do you wish your dad differently? Like, do you think like it was pretty hard, like being raised by someone who was 19, who's still like think about us when we were 19, man, what was that like pretty hard on you, man? Like, was that heavy? Is there scars from that? Like, everyone's doing the best they can, you know.
Doing the best they can. That's a good way to put it.
You know, man, like that's what we say. Like that's why, like, you know, I have this torch on my forearm, is like we're passing the torch, and we've received the torch one way or another from our influence. Like, I'd like to say our fathers, but you in a lot of ways didn't have that, man. But so you receive this torch, and for better or for worse, you're gonna pass it on yourself one day. Mm-hmm. You know, and the aim is that you and I, we carry it on and take it further than those that pass it to us, is that we grow, hopefully. But I do think it's fair for you to look back and like, man, talk to me about like, was that crazy? Was that hard? What do you look back and maybe in some ways grieve and mourn?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. Definitely hard at times. I had to. Because I was the oldest of all the kids, so I felt like I grew up pretty quickly. I mean, I was working in middle school because he owned a landscaping company. So I worked, went over there, would work mornings, would work after school, we'd work all summer. Like, I was working at such a young age. I helped with the kids, helped, you know, babysit them, raise them, all those different types of things. And then he had that business, so he wasn't, you know, home as much as he would like to be. So there was times where it was a lot more difficult than I would have wanted it. And you saying, you know, to back up a little bit, what you're asking, what, you know, what you would change, or I think that's what I was saying with Frank, that kindness. We didn't have that growing up. And we talk about it now. Our family jokes about it. We're like, we should be more loving. And that's the big thing that I would, you know, I love the person I've become, and I'll always say that I wouldn't change anything about my past. You know, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there was something I would add, something I would change, it would just be that kindness and love that we could have grown up with a little more.
Yeah, man. Thanks for sharing that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. That was you know, deeper than I expected, which I'm thrilled that you shared, because I just didn't know a lot about that. And I think there's a lot of power and that honesty. So I appreciate that. And hopefully, you know, someone that hears that can, you know, glean some value from it.
So I don't know JoJo as well. And we're going to end this session in a few minutes. So I'll just close it with this, if you don't mind, Jacob.
That's fine.
How would I'll get your insight on this, but JoJo, when I hear your story about like where you came from and what you've done, right? You know, you've suffered great loss at a young age, and you know, you were kind of just forced to grow up at a young age, man. You're grinding as a middle schooler with your uncle. And then, you know, you're in the police academy, you're in the Marines, you do medicine, man, like, and you sound like a really chill guy over my audio right now, but I just wouldn't have expected that. So Jacob, I mean, like, what kind of guy is JoJo? Is JoJo like, I mean, like the, like who am I talking to right now?
Like current JoJo or yeah, old JoJo?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cause I would think like, you know, like this guy's like got a chip on his shoulder, you know, but he sounds like pretty chill and not holding grudges, you know?
Well, so it's funny you say the chill, because that's like, I don't remember a lot of our time wrestling, not our time wrestling together. Like, I remember wrestling together, but like the really deep intricacies. But if there were two things I was going to say was like, JoJo is always super chill. And like, if you crossed him in some way or another, I remember you, I was like, you are not someone I want to mess with, especially like by your senior year, because you were like, you're an animal on the wrestling mat and I was still getting destroyed. But yeah, just being super chill. And I don't ever remember you like messing with me or picking on me in wrestling, which I appreciate, because there were some kids on the team that, you know, just, you know, they always want to mess the younger kids or the little kids. And I was probably like 115 at that time and you're 190. It's just a monster of a man. So yeah. I would say chill, but I appreciate that JoJo, I think you were always like a pretty big team player for our team. And then just what, like you said, welcome people in. And I imagine that's from, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like what you wanted, you know, to be welcomed in, to have that loving and that kindness. And so, you know, is that from what you want? Is that, you know, where that came from?
I believe so. That was definitely, I wanted people to, you know, accept me and, like you said, let me in. And if I'm going to want that from other people, then I'm going to emulate that. I'm going to give that to other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's what I remember of JoJo, just being chill and just super welcoming, always kind to people, not picking on people, not bullying people. You know, if you did, I don't know about it, then take that to the grave with you.
Not that I remember.
No, I don't think anyone's going to hopefully come forward and make us all look bad. But no, that's who JoJo was. And you know, just pumped and thankful that you made it onto the podcast. So,
yeah, dude, absolutely. But, absolutely.
We have to take a quick break because our timer's up. Anyways, see you all back in a second.
All right, we'll be back in a sec.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Last we left you talking about some deep stuff, but Jackson, you had a question you want to dive into?
Yeah, so, you know, you learn some good lessons early on in life, hard lessons, but good lessons, JoJo, and then you kind of gained a more gentle side and a soft side. So, I don't know, what would you say are the character traits and just virtues that you aim to carry yourself with?
That's a really good question. You know, I want people to look at me and know that I'm kind and I'm caring and that I'm there for them with anything they need. I also want people, you know, not to feel like they can walk on me at the same time. So that's, you know, an interesting balance with that. But I think, you know, that's characters everyone should strive for, and basic characters and, you know, virtues that are just, you know, human beings and how we should be. I think those would be the biggest ones without, you know, getting too crazy.
Do you feel like medicine kind of, you know, nursing's really hard. People don't know how much literally we get crapped on, but also, you know, also from management and you know, you are, you know, like, I'm not trying to be inappropriate when I say this, but for 12 hours, you're a whore of the hospital. They can ultimately feels like they do whatever they want to you for 12 hours.
Yes. And I don't know when you got out of nursing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. So, I mean, like, do you, yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear just your thought on that. But, like, I mean, like, do you think that kind of makes you kind of be forced to have this attitude of, like, I also, like, I want to be kind and gentle, but can't be walked on?
I would say that that's interesting. I think nursing has made it harder for me to be that way. Because, like, you do, you want to be careful for the people. I work in the emergency department. Let me rewind. I work in the emergency department and I'm a traveler. So I've been all up the East Coast and now I'm over in Oregon. So you do, you care for the people that come in that need you and they're sickly, you know, but then it gets hard because I'm sure anyone in any department, you know, you deal with people that come in are rude and they're angry. And, you know, you deal with people who are on drugs at the time. And, you know, like you said, you get real crap thrown on you and then you also get crap from the patients. But yeah, it's, you know, you want to be that kind, gentle person that they need, but like I said, and like you're saying, you do have to be firm with a lot of people. But it's definitely have gotten harder the more I've been a nurse to keep the kindness up for some people that don't necessarily deserve it. I don't want to, you know, talk too much about a patient HIPAA and everything else. In simple terms, had a patient really sick, needed blood, went in to do an IV. And as I poked him, he called me the N-word. As I looked at him a little more, I noticed some tattoos that were not appropriate. So things like that, like it's hard to keep that compassion and that kindness up when I'm simply coming in to mass transfuse blood in you to save your life.
Yeah. Such a sense of entitlement, huh? Especially you in the ER, you are the first line like of defense there. You're seeing the bottom of society on that unit. So I think it's like my friends who are ER, like my best friend Spencer, I was telling you about, he's ER now. He's I love him. And I'd say this to his face. He'll say it to your face. He's really cynical now. And he was not like that. He was like, Jacob, you know Spencer, man. He's like this Jesus loving hippie. But has a cynical heart in JoJo. It's because of the ER. Does that make sense? Can you kind of see
how that can happen? And especially through the last 3 years with COVID, I mean, that is real. That really changed a lot of people. And the compassion fatigue was the thing we learned in nursing school, and it especially going through that, and you're just running through patients, trying to save the right person, trying to save multiple lives, and when you're dealing with clientele, but when you're dealing with a population of people and everyone's just so angry and so rude and so disgusted, you know, to even be in the ER while you're just trying to assist them, that's when all nurses become a little, you know,
I imagine more rude. That's super hard because it's like, you're trying to, I'm looking at it from both perspectives and it's like, you're trying to do your job and be compassionate, but they're making your life so difficult. But then you're trying to remember like, oh man, well, like they're upset because they're in the ER. No one wants to be here. Yeah. So you're like trying to show them grace. But then on the flip side, it's like, well, look, this man's just doing his job trying to save your life. So let's show you the most grace. But that's
hard. Yeah.
That's just circles. Yeah. I respect people that do it. Cause I know Jake Lamar's an ER nurse too, or he was. So I'm like,
he sends me, we Snapchat each other. But yeah, you know, it's just like little things. Like I walk, you know, you walk by a patient and they've got a cup and they're like banging it on the table. Like, when is someone going to serve me? And I'm like, I've had this, the patient, I walk by, I'm going to use the restroom, you know, for the first time in 8 hours. And she bangs the cup on the table and she's like, why am I not getting any service? And I turned to her and it was just immediate. I was like, hi, my name is Joseph. I'm one of the nurses here. What's your name? Let's treat each other like humans. And it's just like,
let's go. It came out
of my mouth like that to her.
Man,
maybe I shouldn't.
No, that's good.
That.
Like, that's good.
It was completely changed her. She was like, okay, well, I'm sorry. And I was like,
right.
Know,
that's so good.
Love it.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Yeah. Sometimes you just go like, not call now, but just a little bit of firmness. It's like, oh,
a little
like,
bit of firmness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's super good. Yeah. Dude, how rad would it have been, JoJo, if you just like took the cup and started peeing in the cup?
I like my job. So
you're like, Jackson, I'm not trying to go out like you, man. That's tough.
You'd be blacklisted from every travel position in existence.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we can't have that. Okay?
Oh man,
she was kind after that. I get it. She's been sitting there for so long, and she's, you know, wanting updates. And then, you know, people who've never been in the ER, they don't understand the ER. They don't understand that we're doing it based on acuity. And, you know, you've been in here for 5 hours. You've got abdominal pain, but I've got to go rush and help this person who's having a stroke or this person who's having a heart attack. And, you know, people just don't understand it unless they're in that environment. And I try to keep that in the back of my head.
That's good.
Yeah. What, so we kind of touched on mentorship a good bit. What do you feel like you like can still get better, and what are you still learning today? Or is there a mentor in your life currently that's really made a big impact to you in your job? You know, like what are you still getting better in, or what can you get better in?
Things not related to me, because when I read, you know, you sent me those questions, the first thing, and I was going over with my sister, cousin, Madison, but the first thing that came to my head was just loving myself. And that's a deep thing. But that was the first thing. And just in general, though, getting better in. It's a lot of things I would like to get better. You know, fitness, life. I want to be around for my family more often. You know, I'm always trying to learn little things. I'm trying to, you know, I've got Babbel, trying to learn Spanish. You know, little things like that. I've got my girlfriend. We live in Portland together. And every day I want to get better at loving her and showing her that I love her, doing a lot of things that I didn't know or didn't see growing up. So that's one thing that I've continuously getting better in, I guess, in a broad spectrum, is just love, loving myself, loving other humans, and just expressing that in the best way that I can.
Man, that's powerful. That's super cool. No, I think that's... not the answer I expected, but once again, you always surprise me, which is cool. I think, you know, that's even convicting for me. Like, man, I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better, you know, a better father and better, better son, a better coworker. You know, and I feel like for me, that's something I'm definitely getting back more into the roots of who I feel like I was pre-baby, because man, does that throw everything for a loop? And Jackson was able to show me a lot of grace in that of like, hey man, you know, like, you know, how's your quiet time going, or how's X, Y, and Z going? I'm like, man, it's going terrible. All I want to do is sleep. And he's like, well, you know, man, like when you're just when you're holding cow and he's crying and losing his mind, you're just like, man, what a blessing that is just to hold him. So
I heard a good quote. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I guess that's the mentorship as well. Picture yourself, you're 84 years in the future, and you're looking back at yourself now, and that's the only time you're going to spend with that your child, you know. So if you know you're 84 years in the future and you're looking back at that one moment, and that's the only moment you can have, how are you going to respond and how are you going to act in that moment? So that's like, I try to take that into consideration too, like, man, if this is the last moment I'm ever going to have with this individual at this time, how am I going to react in it?
Yeah, my answer to that is like, be present, because especially after work, you're like tired, you want to relax, you want to sit on the couch or anything. But then the hours running around, Jackson's gonna get double this, I'm sure, once Jude Line starts moving around. But yeah, be present. That's my answer to that. So I like that quote.
Yeah, that's the best advice. That's the best principle. It's hard to live out, you know. I think that, you know, we got to wake up and daily choose that discipline to be present, or as it's been said, you know, be where your feet are, and give people your attention. And it's really hard, I think. You know, there's just so much distraction, but I think it's a good battle to fight for sure. So I've been married for 10 years coming up in October, and got a great wife, and we're having a great time. Got two kids, and she's just very sweet, very incredible person. And I feel very safe with her. And I realize sometimes I don't always create like a safe environment for her. Not from a standpoint of course, anything physically. I just mean like, am I able to like create an environment where her guard is let down, you know, to where like, I'm not going to like bust her chops about doing something or not doing something, call her out for something stupid she said or that I thought was foolish or something. You know, am I going to be a little snippy, or just rude, or you know how the expression goes, we hurt the ones we love the most. Like you get really comfortable around someone and then you like don't treat them like you should treat like the person you love the most. You should treat the best, you know. It's this horrible thing we can fall into. So I was really questioning, is like, man, like Jackson, like, are you creating just a really, really safe place for your person? And so that's what I'm working on right now. But do you guys feel like that you're doing that well right now? And if you're doing that well, like, what are you doing to create that space?
Using some deep thought.
Yeah, I always jump right into an answer. So I'm like, I got to stop. I got to think.
That's what we learned from Neil. He's like, don't answer right away. Because if you answer right away, you didn't really like listen, you know?
I think for me, I'm quick to give solutions when Hannah's having a hard time. Say it's work, anything, but I need to listen more.
She has a hard time a lot, you know? She's always struggling.
What about I know you're trying
I'm
to bait
being a jerk again. Dude, that's going to be my thing with you for now. Jacob, remember when I was giving your sister or your cousin a hard time? I was calling her Big Ann. You know, remember that from last time?
Yeah, I
did. Now I'm trying to dog on Hannah. I'm totally joking.
Well, I was hoping you'd go deeper. I wanted you to really rag.
You're like, oh, what don't you like about my wife? Go on. All right, go on. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, shoot. Big Ann part was hilarious.
You were saying like when she's having a hard time at work, you're quick to like just give a solution.
Quick to give a solution. But I've heard someone say once, they're like, don't either your response or not your response, but your response could be like, do you want a solution or do you want compassion or you know? And so it's like, I need to be better about just listening. Cause typically she just wants, doesn't want a solution. You know, she just wants to vent and then like, but also need to like, sometimes I'll start dogging on the person. And she's like, once like, if it's like one of her family members or something, which has happened before, she's like, no, only I can dog on them. And I'm like, oh. You know what I mean? So I think for me, it's listening and then, you know, being conscious of her love languages and loving her in those. I would say like listening and loving her how she needs to be loved and being like, you know, even though we've been married almost 5 years, I need to dive into that again and be like, you know, how do you need to be loved? And that's a conscious daily effort, which is hard. It's like the being present thing. It's like, you got to do this, you know, daily, minute by minute, and being aware of it is the challenge, I think.
For sure. And I think that's what helps create that safe space that Jackson's talking about as well. It's just understanding how they need to be loved, understanding what they need, and, you know, being compassionate for them.
Right. Jackson, you still there?
You're good.
Okay, we lost your screen. Anyway, Jackson's probably throwing in a fat dip or something. He doesn't want the people to see.
I quit dipping years ago.
Oh, okay. What, how do you feel like you're doing that, JoJo? Like, what's your girlfriend's name again? Apologies.
Oh, her name is Cecilia. We met that's why I'm still in Oregon. We met at the ER there.
Thanks. She's got a sweet name, Cecilia.
Yeah.
She's cool.
Yeah. Her family are both, her mom and dad are Italian.
But dang, I've been doing Duolingo. California. Almost got a 600 day streak on Italian. Tell her she'd be so proud of me.
She would be proud of you. She doesn't know Italian. We were trying to learn that too. We spent 2 months in Europe and we knew nothing.
Dang, I'm way better than her. But how do you feel you're creating a safe space for her? What do you think?
You know, just to go back to what you were saying, just it's listening, you know, communication is huge in our relationship, and it's huge and something that we've talked about, because you see a lot of different relationships and people yelling and people always arguing and things like that. And I think we've had that foundation from day one, is that we just communicate. We talk about everything. We have any issues, we lay it out on the table. There's something we don't like, there's something we disagree with. It's like, hey, like I felt this way, you feel this way. Let's discuss it. Let's not leave it out there and not have an answer for it. I think that was a big step in our relationship, because we've been together almost a year now. We already lived together. Like, it was just so easy from day one, but it's also because we just talk a lot. But also we work in the ER, and I think that builds a huge relationship when you're just under stress all the time. and you see how that person reacts and they see how you react. So I think she feels safe in me because I'm also there at work with her. And she knows I'm someone she can count on. And I know she's someone that I can count on if I need, you know, either of us need help. So I think that brings a different dynamic into what we're able to do and how we're able to feel safe around one another.
Honestly, I feel like if your relationship can survive in an ER environment, I'm like, kids are going to be nothing. If kids are in the cars in the future, I shouldn't jinx you or anything, but I mean, seriously. But going back to the communication, that's like, if anyone ever asked me, not that I get asked marriage advice ever, but my answer would be communication. And that's something I feel like even Hannah and I do pretty well, but it's like day in, day out, it still can always get better. And like, we're always improving at that. I think she does a better job of communicating than me. Like I'm always like, oh yeah, we got to communicate. But then I don't really say or talk how I feel. I'm just like smiling when I shouldn't be. I like that answer.
Yeah, and I've also been learning that through the years too. That's going back to, you know, childhood with Uncle John, learning my voice and then being able to say what's on my mind too. I think that's a huge thing in a relationship and providing that safe net where, you know, your partner really feels like they could just be who they are and be themselves. And that's, you know, when you learn the most about them, that's when you get to learn their and love their flaws and love, you know, the best things about them.
Right. Yeah. Cause like, so as a kid, did you feel like you couldn't speak up with Uncle John? Like where that fear was coming in, you were talking about?
Oh yeah.
He's a big dude too. I would.
He's a big dude. Yeah. No. It was a tough childhood with him for sure.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm 100% one of those people, everything happens for a reason and I wouldn't change it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool. And I hope people can take hope listening to you, because there's a lot of people that go through these hardships and it's like, do you know, are you going to cave in? Are you going to collapse? Are you going to break? Or you didn't deserve to go through this hardship. You didn't do anything wrong as a child, but yeah, you went through all this heartbreak and difficulties. And it's like, so what are you going to do about it? And I think it's cool to show like, look, I went to the military. I had a successful college wrestling career. I then became a nurse, and it's like, you made something out of your life and you've learned from these people. And that's not to take away from what people have gone through. You know, I look at Hannah the same way. She's gone through some, you know, some crazy things. Like she's lost her mom as well. And things like that. And you're like, well, what are you going to do about it? You're going to break, or you're going to, you know, make something out of your life. But she has too. So, you know, I hope people can take encouragement from that. Like, it is possible, and, you know, seek those mentors out and seek those people, because she had some really powerful mentors. Owen is one of them, Jackson from season one. So can't stress that enough. Find yourself a mentor.
And my is kind of dumb as it was, I listened to a lot of YouTube when I was a kid. The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith, that movie changed my life. And I wish Jocko was around when I was growing up too. Because, I had that moment. It was, there was a lot of like, whoa me growing up. Like, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? You know, especially a lot of the people we hung out with. You guys had, I'm not you in general, but like, you know, a lot of people had some great, you know, families, great lives is what we saw from the outside. And then I think that whoa me moment stopped after, kind of after the military. I don't know if you knew the whole, I was engaged coming out of high school.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't know how in depth, and I don't want to put anyone's name.
No, you're good. You're good.
Slander any names, but that didn't work out in the easiest sense.
Spill the tea. What'd she do? Give me an
address. What did he do?
I can't.
Dude, I want to slash some chick's tires. I don't care.
No, you do not have to. Yeah, I don't hold grudges.
I'm being a jerk.
I wish nothing but the best for these people. Yeah. It didn't work out, and that was really tough because I was the last person I had because I had walked out on my family and I didn't have communication with them. You know, I had Meg and Frank. I left for the military, and then I had her. And then that was when that whoa me moment was like, you know what? I'm done. I got to figure this out. I'm going to create this life I want to create, and I'm not going to sit here and let anyone else dictate it. And that's like a lot of people, I think, still need that moment in their life to be like, hey, I have to take charge of this.
So how did the pursuit of happiness tie into that? Like, how did that create that? What was me? I got to hear that well, part that, too.
Well, that was in high school. That was a lot of, cause that was a lot of whoa me moment. And then Will Smith's quote to his son, they're playing basketball and he's like telling his son, he's like, you know, I don't really want to play basketball. You don't really need to do this because you're not going to make it to the NBA. You're not going to be a basketball star. So we don't need to do this. And the kid gets like, you know, he's upset. It's a kid you're talking to. And it's a quote where he's like, hey, don't ever let anyone tell you you can't do something. If you want something, go get it, period. And that's always like stuck with me. I'm like, man, that's it. That's the quote. You know, if I want something, I'm going to go get it, period. I'm not going to let anything stand in my way or get in my way. And if someone else can do it, why can't I do it? Kind of mindset.
Yeah.
I think that's been there for since then. Anything I do, I'm like, I can do it.
What's he say? Not me, not no one, not anyone or something like that. He's like, not even me kind of thing. Like, Will Smith to his kid. He's like, not even me. Don't even let me tell you what to do. Yeah, like his dad.
He's like, not even me. Yeah. If you want something, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like that you heard that in high school too, because I feel like that probably helped a lot with wrestling like that. For me, like after wrestling, I was like, oh, I could do anything now, which is probably an over sense of self-confidence. But
definitely wrestling. If you can go through wrestling, you're fine. Life's easy after that.
Yeah.
Especially when you got Coach Kelly and Bechtel and I forget that one wrestling coach too, but they were brutal. That's another person. As crazy as it seems, Coach Kelly did a lot for me too in high school.
Yeah. So can you elaborate on that? Because I know you mentioned him before. So Coach Kelly's our wrestling coach. If you're from Melbourne, you probably don't know this, but he was the former owner of County Line, and now he owns
County Slime.
Have you been to County Line before, Jackson?
No, my parents love me, so they taught me not to go to places.
Smart. Like that. So we would have our wrestling coach owned that place, and we would have all our wrestling banquets there. And you're walking through this place, and you're like, "Please,
dude,
don't
that's the most O'Galley High School wrestling thing I've ever heard."
And our coach was a G. He's so good too; like you couldn't tell. He's a little dude. Anyway, yeah. So
he's gonna find me and beat me up after talking all this trash. Now,
honestly, the guy's probably in a wheelchair, but I still wouldn't fight him to this.
Heck no. Right.
He was, yeah. No, Coach Kelly helped me out a lot because my birthday was later in the year. So I was 18 in high school, like my senior year. Mm. And he would let me work at the bar. Like it was my only
place. That's right. Yeah.
So I had to go, I was a 18 year old bouncer working at a bar. It was great. It was a great experience. Yeah. Yeah. So that helped me out a lot. Because there was a moment.
Dude, you were bred for that position though, man. You know?
What? I was.
Like, I mean, just like being in wrestling and everything, you're just scooping people as you needed to.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. That helped me, like, another thing, too, on the grow up fast. But,
well, that's what's cool about Coach Kelly. He was honestly kind of an a-hole sometimes to people. But at the end of the day, he really would do anything for anybody. Like, this is a guy that raised his three kids by himself. Like, he got custody, raised three young kids, still was a wrestling coach, still was a business owner. I would say very successful that you wouldn't notice on the surface, but yeah, he would do anything for his team. He would do anything for his player or his wrestlers. But a little rough around the edges. He's still always called me a doctor when he sees me, but I'm like, I'm not a doctor. He's like, yeah, this guy, he's a doctor. Like,
he always had that he looked out for you. That was the thing. No matter how tough he was on you, no matter how much he picked on you, it was all out of love. He loved every single one of us. He would would do anything. Take his shirt right off his back for you, you know.
He had a soft side. Yeah. Even the kids that were difficult, he was still like, he was soft with them at the end of the day. That's cool. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him. Yeah. Gosh, what a throwback.
Shout out Coach Kelly.
What's his last name? Coach Benninger. Kelly Benninger. Yeah. Let's go. Jackson, go buy crickets for us and just be like Kelly Benninger. His son will probably come up though.
Yeah. No, they've got that new place in downtown Melbourne.
Oh, that's right. Isn't it County Line again?
Yeah. Yeah, they're killing it out there they're doing great. Yeah. They're doing great.
Well, so for you in the future, do you want kids? Are kids in the books or is that
we've talked? Yeah. Cecilia and I have talked about it. She's a little younger than I am, so we've got a little bit of time to like plan. We're in no rush to get kids. She's 23, so she's a lot younger than me. Yeah.
Hey, Yala, good for you.
Well, it's funny, you know, I get to the hospital and she's like, I always remember this. she's got like people around her like talking. She's got this beautiful smile and she's got this like these warm eyes. So she's really easy to talk to. They're all gathered around. I'm like, oh, that's got to be like a nurse practitioner, physician assistant. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to talk to her. Like, she's beautiful. I got to figure out who she is. And it was like her second week off orientation. I was like, ah, darn.
Yeah.
But no, it was
did you
good.
Have like a pickup line you laid on or anything?
I asked her to be my work wife.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad I asked. That's a great answer.
I was like, hey, like, I'm a travel nurse and I'm new here. You want to be like, I was like, I need a work wife. She was like, I'll be your work wife. And I was like,
oh
game
my
over.
Gosh.
And then we started dating that day or what?
No, actually, no. She didn't want to date at first because obviously I'm like this, you know, I'm just travel nurse. She thinks I'm just some other, you know, inappropriate word. But just some other, you know, dude coming in. I've got, you know, I'm tattooed and I'm a mixed dude coming into Oregon. They don't get a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. She's like already red flagging.
Yeah, red flag. Huge red flag. I'm a walking red flag. So, no, she didn't want to at first, and I ended up extending my contract. And I was like, I extended because I really like you. Like, I want to be with you.
No, that's like, cool.
Oh, yeah.
No, keep going. That was cool.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's how it worked out. And she just thought I was like this player and everything. I was like, no, if I want to date you, you're someone I think I would marry. I'm not here to play games. And I think once she finally realized that, she was like, okay, yeah, this is a good idea.
Yeah. So, dang, that's cool.
It was funny.
So kids are, you know, you think in the books, but you said just because there's no rush, obviously, but so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No rush about it, but we've talked about it several times. And it's more of at this time, which there's a lot of change happening and we're trying to figure out where we want to be long term. But I think if it were to happen, we wouldn't be upset about it.
Right. Right. All right. One sec. Sorry. This thing's 10 minutes left. Oh gosh. This thing always just creeps up on us, huh? I mean, any thoughts for you? Like, you know, we asked you on, of course, but did you have any thoughts coming in here? Anything you felt like, you know, you needed to share? Or?
I was a little nervous. Obviously I've shared some pretty deep things. So I was a little nervous about that. I didn't know how it would be. But I love listening to your guys' podcast. I've, you know, listened to it and it's a lot of insightful things. And I mean, from out of the military, finding that mentor, I've never been able to, I guess, long-term be in a place long enough to meet someone like that. I've got some really great friends that I've met that I'm always talking to for guidance and different things and just life issues. But it's always nice to just hear other people's stories and hear how other people are doing it. And I think that's what I just immediately, that first episode, I was like, I got to listen to this. I shared it with Blake. I don't know if you remember him, but he's, I shared.
How old is he now?
He was born in 99.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he was born in 99.
Anyway, go ahead. So you shared it with him.
Yeah, I shared it with him. And it's just, you know, it's just nice information to hear and, you know, how different people are doing things. And then I've seen the worst in children, from working in the group home with sexually abused, physically abused, mentally abused kids, working in the ER. That's like a huge fear of mine. It's like, man, if any of this happened to my child, like, I don't know how I would handle it if, you know, something bad happened to my child. Like, that's like been a huge fear. And then it's always nice to just hear like, he's like, I love my kid. We're doing great. We're having all this fun, you know, seeing these like good things. And I think that's what I need more in my life, to feel comfortable with making that decision with children later on.
Yeah. I think that was actually, you know, hearing you say it gave me a lot of like flashbacks to things Hannah said. Like, she's had so much childhood trauma growing up and things that went down. So it's like, for her, and not calling either of you pessimistic, but there's so much, it's easier to look at like what you've been through and base off your future experiences of what you've been through. I mean, that makes sense. So for like me coming in, it was like, I think we were good in that sense with each other, where I had a pretty cush life, I would say. You know, you were being polite and not saying that, but I had a cush life. And so for her to have me being able to be like, you know, there is a sunshine on the other side of the storm, mm-hmm. kind of thing, cliche. I think I don't know where I was going with that, but that is challenging.
No, you're right. It's what people need to see, and what people, you know, especially, you know, her, people who hadn't had that, you know,
right.
Like, it's not necessarily pessimistic, but it's like, afraid, worried, concerns for it.
Right. Yeah.
And Joseph too, man, you know, like, you know, you don't have to have a plan for kids yet, you know, one step at a time. But, you know, if that's God's plan for your life one day, you're going to be a great dad.
Yeah.
And, okay. And thanks. You know, I can just tell by spending just an hour with you that you just, you're going to pass the torch in a beautiful way. And we don't have to have these generational curses passed on to generation to generation. You know, you have the intention to take your child, daughter, son, whenever that timing happens, much farther than you were able to go yourself. And that's what we're all about, like on the Big Daddies podcast is taking the torch.
Man, you gotta chill out.
Heck yeah, man.
Keep going, Jackson.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's real talk, man. Like, that's why, like, it's going to be rad. And, you know, like, our past does not define our future. And Jojo, I think that is why it's cool. There's a diversity of guests. You know, some of us have a super vanilla upbringing and some of us had a hard upbringing, but you're not here blaming anyone or anything. You know, you're still charging forward, and that's a huge encouragement. And I think it's really interesting is that, you know, I do believe that we're all going to stand before God and be accountable for the grace that was extended towards us. You know, like my parents are married, my parents are still married, and that's a rare thing. And I was never abused. I was like taken care of, which sadly that's becoming more and more rare. But with that, I have to be a good steward of that blessing I have in my life. But then when I get to hear an incredible story like yours, Joe, like, you know, you're like, look, I came from a hard place and I have maybe gotten a little less grace than some people, but I'm going to like multiply, you know, what was given to me and go much farther, man. So I think that people who listen to this are going to be really inspired by you, man.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with that any more.
That's awesome. Thank you guys too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. It's been real, man. Yeah. So let's be in touch. Man, a word of encouragement to you is while you're in Portland, before your contract ends, you have to go to Bridgetown Church. And I don't know if you're a church guy or not, or where you're at with that, but even if you're not, go and visit this place. The pastor there, his name is Tyler Stanton. He's the truth. I'm going to drop the podcast in the group text. At least check that out, because I think it's going to inspire you. This guy is different, man. It's called Bridgetown Church in downtown Portland, man. So no church has had a greater impact on my life, and I never even been to the dang place. So go check it out for me. And
I want to check it out for you. Yeah.
They could be a weird cult, and you might need to tell me to stay away from that place.
If it's in Portland, I don't doubt it.
Dude. From what I gather, there's like a naked bike ride through the city every week. Is that true, or is that not really what? Like, that's how we hear.
It's a real thing.
What? That's crazy.
It's a real thing. Yeah.
I don't think it's every week, but they do have that. Yeah. It's tough.
I think there's like a specific time for it. But yeah, there's a naked bike ride through the city.
Wow. Would you ever take part?
Can you send us a photo?
I have photos already. Do you want to?
I talk a big game. I can't follow through. So
yeah,
it's tough.
I'd be a part of that one. I don't know.
If we fly out there, would you do it?
Yeah.
Can we get like a tricycle? What, like a
That's it, bro.
Honestly, yeah, I'd consider it.
We'll post it on the youth group Instagram page. I'm sure I'd keep a job for a long time.
Pegs and handlebars. We just do one bike, one person on the pegs, one person
what
on
a thrill.
Handlebars. Yeah.
Okay.
Dibs on the pegs. man.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
But seriously, Jojo, thanks so much for coming on. I mean, this was way better than my expectations were when they were high. So like, not high, but like in a good way. I expected a lot. I knew it was gonna be great, but like knocked it out of the park. So really, really appreciate you coming on and looking forward to the future, baby, if that ever happens, and bringing you back on, how that's going.
Absolutely, man. Thank you guys. Thank you guys.
Jojo, it was a pleasure, man. Yeah. God bless absolutely. You, bro.
You two in the same town right now, by the way. So
cool. I'm coming over, man. I'll see you soon.
Miss you already.
Yes, let's go.
Dude, thanks again, Jojo.
All right.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
Okay, now have you ever been with a...